This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Let's get a little bit more insight. We turn to the other faction of the NBA. It's NBA.com. It's John Schumann. He's been with us before. And make sure you read his stuff on the Knicks-Pistons series. Wow, good stuff, the takeaways from that game. And John right now is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How you guys doing?
We are doing good. We're getting set for game two here. What were your thoughts on game one between the Cavs and the Heat, and what were you able to kind of digest in that game?
Ty Jerome, lots of yeah. Ty Jerome. You know what? Like, you know, the Cavs had the number one offense in the regular season, and they had the most efficient offensive performance in game one over the weekend. So there was no slowing them down. You know, obviously Jerome was remarkably efficient, but they got, you know, big performances across the board, and I think, you know, maybe the one concern for them going in was rebounding, but the Heat aren't a great offensive rebounding team, and that sort of wasn't too much of an issue in game one. So, you know, we'll see going forward. I think maybe we may see more zone from the Heat going forward. They didn't play a lot in game one. They played more, I think, in the regular season meetings. And, you know, if they're going to have any sort of hope in slowing the Cavs down, they're going to probably have to mix things up defensively a little bit more.
John, the Heat, the first 10 seed to make it into the playoffs, but they're the Heat. They're Eric Spoelstra. You still have Bam Adebayo. You have Tyler Hero. They're not the Heat teams of the past. Do you think they're capable of putting together a couple of good efforts and giving the Cavs a challenge here, or do you think this is a 4 or 5 game series?
I would say it's 4 or 5 game series, but that doesn't mean it's going to be easy or as easy as game one was, you know, going forward. They're a tough team. Hero is a very good offensive player. Like, he's the sort of one challenge the Cavs have defensively, and just making sure, you know, they can then handle a sort of a ball handler who can shoot like that off the dribble, because they're going to see more of those going forward in the playoffs. And like I said, rebounding is going to be a key. Yeah, I think they're a tough team. Like, they are the Heat. Like you said, they're actually, like, the Heat in the regular season were statistically better than that Heat team 2 years ago that went to the finals. Like, that finals team had been outscored in the regular season. This one was a little bit better than that, at least statistically, not record-wise. So they are, you know, they have the ability to throw lots of different defenses at you. Adebayo, we know, is a terrific defender. And so, yeah, I think there are challenges within it, but the Cavs are, you know, they're the best team in the East, or were the best team in the East all season. They should be able to take care of business.
So at what point, like, I think Cavs fans are trying to figure, they're like, okay, they won by 21 in game one. It was an extremely guard-dominated game with Garland and Mitchell, and then, as we talked about, Ty Jerome being able to step it up. How important is it for them to get Evan Mobley involved more than just 10 shots in a game, or Jared Allen making sure he's getting more than eight, and you know, and making sure that Mobley can get into double figures? Like, how important is that going to be, not only maybe in this Miami series, but if they're able to advance?
I mean, for sure you would like Mobley to have, you know, build some offensive confidence, I guess, going forward in the playoffs. But I think, you know, I'm not one to sort of worry about what in certain individuals are doing. In a, if you win the game and you have an efficient performance as the Cavs did the other day, you take it, and like, you take what the defense gives you. And if the defense is allowing the guards to operate as much as they did the other day, then you take that and you allow them to that. You have the talent in the backcourt to win games like that. But for sure, yeah, you would love, you know, to have Mobley, like I said, you know, have a big game. So he knows going forward, he can come up big in big moments like that. But like I said, like, you take what the other team gives you. You got to play, you know, the game that's, you got to make the right plays. And I think the Cavs guards were doing that the other day.
John Schumann joining us from NBA.com. John, with that thought in mind, does Miami think, okay, well, that didn't work, so now we got to try and, you know, body up the guards, make sure we don't give them a whole lot of space, and hope they don't get hot? Donovan Mitchell did a great job getting to the basket, so that's where he got a ton of his points. Do they try a different course and maybe try to get Jared Allen and Evan Mobley to beat you if you're Miami? Or do they just hope maybe the Cavaliers guards just don't hit shots like they hit the other day?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's always the question after game one, right? Like, do we have to change what we're doing, or do we have to do what we're doing better? Like, do we have to just be better at at the initial game plan, right? Like, you could call for adjustments, but if the team didn't execute the initial game plan in the right way, then adjustments aren't necessary, really. But I do think, yeah, they could do a better job of keeping those guards in front, and that may be, like I said, more zone. It could be more switching on the pick and roll, right? Like, and just saying, you know, bam, switch onto those guys and try to keep, you know, swallow them up and force somebody else, you know, force the ball to move and have somebody else beat you. You know, I think that's definitely the sort of the number one thing to watch in game two is how much zone we see, and then how much switching do we see on the pick and roll.
John, how much fun is this Ty Jerome story? I mean, everything he touched in the fourth quarter it turned to gold.
That's silly.
In game one, he is fun to watch, and just a great comeback story.
It's incredible. It's a real shame that, like, he wasn't eligible for Most Improved award, like, because I think that's definitely his. Like, he's the it's the classic Most Improved story, right? Like, a guy that barely played last year and then just having a big role on a really good team, you know, and a guy that wasn't, you know, and wasn't like a top draft pick either, right? Right. You guys can tell me like where he was drafted. I don't remember, but like that, and having played multiple years in the league, right? Like, low draft pick, played multiple years, never really had a big role, and then now just being such an important part of one of the best teams in the league.
John Schumann joining us from NBA.com. You've got a story out after last night's Knicks-Pistons game, taking some thoughts about that one. The Pistons were just terrible in game one, a 21-0 run by the Knicks. I mean, they were good until then, and then it just went bye-bye. What did you think last night? Can the Pistons pull that off? JB certainly has some experience going against the Knicks in the playoffs.
Yes, and I do think the Pistons have looked certainly like the better team in this series. They, you know, you take away that 21-0 run from the Knicks, which happened super quickly. They probably should be up 2-0. They almost melted down again last night, but then just got a huge shot from Dennis Schroeder in the final minute, taking advantage of Jalen Brunson on defense, which is the one thing they've done quite a bit of in this series, more than the Cavs did when JB Bickerstaff was coaching the Cavs a couple of years ago. They've put him in more sort of pick and roll actions than other playoff opponents have done in the past, and that has paid off. Like, they've They've really scored efficiently when they put Brunson in the pick and roll. I think it's like the obvious, game plan to do. Like, you know, this is the Knicks' best player, but he's a liability on the defensive end of the floor. Put him into action and take advantage. And that's the thing about the Knicks. Like, is they're a really good team and a great offense, but their two best offensive players can be attacked on the other end of the floor. You can put Brunson in action. You could put Karl Anthony Towns in action, and you can take advantage. That being said, the defense was also really good for Detroit last night. It was only the third time all season that the Knicks have been held under a point per possession. So that end of the floor is also important. Brunson was good, but not great. Like, he made some mistakes in that game. He scored 37 points, I think, but wasn't particularly efficient. And then Karl Anthony Towns did not score after halftime, and he barely touched the ball, and that's because, you know, the Knicks offense can get really Brunson heavy at times.
Are you leaning, or were you leaning Cavs-Celtics Eastern Conference Finals when this whole thing started?
For sure, definitely. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's what we're all waiting for. Obviously, like, there are some tough challenges. Like, Detroit and New York are really good. So Boston will have a tougher challenge in the second round for sure. Indiana is really good. And Milwaukee is obviously dangerous just because, given their top line talent. So yes, both teams should face tougher challenges in the second round. And there's, you know, definitely things to watch in those series. But yes, I think we're all sort of waiting for Cavs Celtics in the conference finals.
If you're the Cavs, who would concern you more in a second round matchup if you're able to get there? Would it be Indiana? Would it be Milwaukee?
I would say Indiana. Pacers are just a pain in the butt to guard. They lead the league in ball movement. They're top five in player movement, just like how much the bodies move on offense. They are really tough to defend. And it's not just all Tyrese Halliburton. You know, Pascal Siakam is a tough matchup. I know the Cavs were not sort of whole when they lost to the Pacers down the stretch of the season. So it's not, I don't think you take any away from that. I just think that Indiana is an improved defensive team from last year, and just really a high octane offense that's difficult to defend. And so that will be a challenge. I think Cleveland should win that series if that was the matchup, but I think they're the tougher sort of, I would fear them a little bit more because they're going to wear you out, especially defensively.
John, how important is this for Donovan Mitchell? Like, I thought, you know, he had the week off, or he had a little bit more than a week, a little bit of time to get ready for game one against Miami. And when I was watching him at the beginning of the game, I'm like, man, he looks so refreshed. And how much of it can he have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder to prove to folks that he can win in the playoffs and that he should be talked about when we're talking about the best players in the league?
Sure, I guess. You know, I don't really think of it that way, but that makes sense. I mean, he's had some terrific playoff series in the past with the Jazz. Like, he had, there was the bubble series, I remember, against Denver, where he was just ridiculous, and then the following year he had another really good series, if I remember correctly. So it's not like he's thought of as a bad playoff performer or anything like that. So, but yeah, I mean, there is a championship in front of him, right? Like, he should that should be the number one motivation, is that you have a championship caliber team and the opportunity to win an NBA championship right now. Like, go out and get it. And as much as he may want to prove himself as the best player on the best team, like, he's got to, you know, make the right decisions, make the right plays, be willing to defend, you know, like, do all the dirty work that's needed to get his team to the top.
John, as always, we appreciate your perspective. Great stuff on the NBA. Looking forward to reading you at NBA.com. And, of course, make sure, if you haven't had a chance to check him out at NBA.com, read his takeaways from the Knicks and Pistons. John, thank you so much. We appreciate you.
Thanks, John.
All right, guys. Thanks. Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40.
period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Thanks. Take care. Let's get a little bit more insight. We turn to the other faction of the NBA. It's NBA.com. It's John Schumann. He's been with us before. And make sure you read his stuff on the Knicks-Pistons series. Wow, good stuff. The takeaways from that game. And John right now is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How you guys doing?
We are doing good. We're getting set for game two here. What were your thoughts on game one between the Cavs and the Heat? And what were you able to kind of digest in that game?
Ty Jerome, lots of yeah. Ty Jerome. You know what? Like, you know, the Cavs had the number one offense in the regular season, and they had the most efficient offensive performance in game one over the weekend. So there was no slowing them down. You know, obviously Jerome was remarkably efficient, but they got, you know, big performances across the board. And I think, you know, maybe the one concern for them going in was rebounding, but the Heat aren't a great offensive rebounding team, and that sort of wasn't too much of an issue in game one. So, you know, we'll see going forward. I think maybe we may see more zone from the Heat going forward. They didn't play a lot in game one. They played more, I think, in the regular season meetings. And, you know, if they're going to have any sort of hope in slowing the Cavs down, they're going to probably have to mix things up defensively a little bit more.
John, the Heat, the first 10 seed to make it into the playoffs, but they're the Heat. They're Eric Spoelstra. You still have Bam Adebayo. You have Tyler Hero. They're not the Heat teams of the past. Do you think they're capable of putting together a couple of good efforts and giving the Cavs a challenge here, or do you think this is a 4 or 5 game series?
I would say it's 4 or 5 game series, but that doesn't mean it's going to be easy as game one was, you know, going forward. They're a tough team. Hero is a very good offensive player. Like he's the sort of one challenge the Cavs have defensively and just making sure, you know, they can then handle a sort of a ball handler who can shoot like that off the dribble, because they're going to see more of those going forward in the playoffs. And like I said, rebounding is going to be a key. Yeah, I think they're a tough team. Like, they are the Heat. Like you said, they're actually, like, the Heat in the regular season were statistically better than that Heat team 2 years ago that went to the finals. Like, that finals team had been outscored in the regular season. This one was a little bit better than that, at least statistically, not record-wise. So they are, you know, they have the ability to throw lots of different defenses at you. Adebayo, we know, is a terrific defender. And so, yeah, I think there are challenges within it, but the Cavs are, you know, they're the best team in the East, or were the best team in the East all season. They should be able to take care of business.
So at what point, like, I think Cavs fans are trying to figure, they're like, okay, they won by 21 in game one. It was an extremely guard-dominated game with Garland and Mitchell, and then as we talked about Ty Jerome being able to step it up. How important is it for them to get Evan Mobley involved more than just 10 shots in a game, or Jared Allen making sure he's getting more than 8, and, you know, and making sure that Mobley can get into double figures? Like, how important is that going to be, not only maybe in this Miami series, but if they're able to advance?
I mean, for sure you would like Mobley to have, you know, build some offensive confidence, I guess, going forward in the playoffs. But I think
you know, I'm not one to sort of worry about what in certain individuals are doing. In a, if you win the game and you have an efficient performance as the Cavs did the other day, you take it. And like, you take what the defense gives you. And if the defense is allowing the guards to operate as much as they did the other day, then you take that and you allow them to that. You have the talent in the backcourt to win games like that. But for sure, yeah, you would love, you know, to have Mobley, like I said, you know, have a big game. So he knows going forward, he can come up big in big moments like that. But like I said, like, you take what the other team gives you. You got to play, you know, the game that's – you got to make the right plays. And I think the Cavs guards were doing that the other day.
John Schumann joining us from NBA.com. John, with that thought in mind, does Miami think, okay, well, that didn't work, so now we got to try and, you know, body up the guards, make sure we don't give them a whole lot of space, and hope they don't get hot? Donovan Mitchell did a great job getting to the basket, so that's where he got a ton of his points. Do they try a different course and maybe try to get Jared Allen and Evan Mobley to beat you if you're Miami? Or do they just hope maybe the Cavaliers guards just don't hit shots like they hit the other day?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's always the question after game one, right? Like, do we have to change what we're doing, or do we have to do what we're doing better? Like, do we have to just be better at what we at the initial game plan, right? Like, the you could call for adjustments, but if the team didn't execute the initial game plan in the right way, then it, you know, adjustments aren't necessary, really. But I do think, yeah, they could do a better job of keeping those guards in front, and that may be, like I said, more zone. It could be more switching on the pick and roll, right? Like, and just saying, you know, bam, switch onto those guys and try to keep, you know, swallow them up and force somebody else, you know, force the ball to move and have somebody else beat you. You know, I think that's definitely the sort of the number one thing to watch in game two is how do, you know, how much zone we see and then how much switching do we see on the pick and roll.
John, how much fun is this Ty Jerome story? I mean, everything he touched in the fourth quarter it turned to gold.
That's silly.
In game one. He is fun to watch and just a great comeback story.
It's incredible. You know, like, and it's a real shame that, like, he wasn't eligible for most improved award, like, because I think that's definitely his. Like, he's it's the classic most improved story, right? Like, a guy that barely played last year and then just having a big role on a really good team, you know, and a guy that wasn't, you know, and wasn't like a top draft pick either, right? Right. You guys can tell me like where he was drafted. I don't remember, but like that and having played multiple years in the league, right? Like, low draft pick, played multiple years, never really had a big role, and then now just being such an important part of one of the best teams in the league.
John Schumann joining us from NBA.com. You've got a story out after last night's Knicks-Pistons game, taking some thoughts about that one. The Pistons were just terrible in game one, a 21-0 run by the Knicks. I mean, they were good until then, and then it just went bye-bye. What did you think last night? Can the Pistons pull that off? JB certainly has some experience going against the Knicks in the playoffs.
Yes, and I do think the Pistons have looked certainly like the better team in this series. They, you know, you take away that 21-0 run from the Knicks, which happened super quickly. And yeah, they probably should be up 2-0. They almost melted down again last night, but then just got a huge shot from Dennis Schroeder in the final minute, taking advantage of Jalen Brunson on defense, which is the one thing they've done quite a bit of in this series, more than the Cavs did when JB Bickerstaff was coaching the Cavs a couple of years ago. They've put him in more sort of pick and roll actions than other playoff opponents have done in the past, and that has paid off. Like, they've really scored efficiently when they put Brunson in the pick and roll. I think it's like the obvious, you know, game plan to do. Like, you know, this is the Knicks' best player, but he's a liability on the defensive end of the floor. Put him into action and take advantage. And that's the thing about the Knicks. Like, is they're a really good team and a great offense, but their two best offensive players
can be attacked on the other end of the floor. You can put Brunson in action. You could put Carl Anthony Towns in action, and you can take advantage. That being said, the defense was also really good for Detroit last night. It was only the third time all season that the Knicks have been held under a point per possession. So that end of the floor is also important. Brunson was good, but not great. Like, he made some mistakes in that game. He scored 37 points, I think, but wasn't particularly efficient. And then Carl Anthony Towns did not score after halftime, and he barely touched the ball, and that's because, you know, the Knicks offense can get really Brunson heavy at times.
Are you leaning, or were you leaning Cavs-Celtics Eastern Conference Finals when this whole thing started?
For sure, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we're all waiting for. Obviously, like, there are some tough challenges. Like, Detroit and New York are really good. So Boston will have a tougher challenge in the second round for sure. Indiana is really good. And Milwaukee is obviously dangerous just because, given their top line talent. So yes, both teams should face tougher challenges in the second round. And there's, you know, definitely things to watch in those series. But yes, I think we're all sort of waiting for Cavs Celtics in the conference finals.
If you're the Cavs, who would concern you more in a second round matchup if you're able to get there? Would it be Indiana? Would it be Milwaukee?
I would say Indiana. Pacers are just a pain in the butt to guard. They lead the league in ball movement. They're top five in player movement, just like how much the bodies move on offense. They are really tough to defend, and it's not just all Tyrese Halliburton. You know, Pascal Siakam is a tough matchup. I know the Cavs were not sort of whole when they lost to the Pacers down the stretch of the season. So it's not, I don't think you take any away from that. I just think that Indiana is an improved defensive team from last year, and just really a high octane offense that's difficult to defend. And so that will be a challenge. I think Cleveland should win that series if that was the matchup, but I think they're the tougher sort of, I would fear them a little bit more because they're going to wear you out, especially defensively.
John, how important is this for Donovan Mitchell? Like, I thought, you know, he had the week off, or he had a little bit more than a week, a little bit of time to get ready for game one against Miami. And when I was watching him at the beginning of the game, I'm like, man, he looks so refreshed. And how much of it can he have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder to prove to folks that he can win in the playoffs and that he should be talked about when we're talking about the best players in the league?
Sure, I guess. You know, I don't really think of it that way, but that makes sense. I mean, he's had some terrific playoff series in the past with the Jazz. Like, he had, there was the bubble series, I remember, against Denver, where he was just ridiculous. And then the following year, he had another really good series, if I remember correctly. So it's not like he's thought of as a bad playoff performer or anything like that. So, but yeah, I mean, there is a championship in front of him, right? Like, he should that should be the number one motivation, is that you have a championship caliber team and the opportunity to win an NBA championship right now. Like, go out and get it. And as much as he may want to prove himself as the best player on the best team, like, he's got to, you know, make the right decisions, make the right plays, be willing to defend, you know, like, do all the dirty work that's needed to get his team to the top.
John, as always, we appreciate your perspective. Great stuff on the NBA. Looking forward to reading you at NBA.com. And, of course, make sure, if you haven't had a chance to check him out at NBA.com, read his takeaways from the Knicks and Pistons. John, thank you so much. We appreciate you.
Thanks, John.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Take care.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer, where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space: Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The revolution redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.